Can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
This is pure country. But this is too.
I got a rice cooking in the microwave. Got a 3-day beard I don't plan to shave. And it's a goofy thing, but I just gotta say, hey, I'm doing all right.
And the question of which country is the real country is one that the PBS series on country music by Ken Burns only tackles indirectly by including both in the 16-hour overview, as if to say it's not one or the other, it's both and more. And maybe what defines country music isn't a sound at all. Maybe it's a story.
Songs that you go, that happened to me yesterday, or that happened to me last week, or I'm going through that heartbreak right now, you know?
Well, to me, it's soul music. It's probably the white man's soul music. And it comes from the heart.
I believe that you can go look and find a country song to fit any mood you're in. Any song that will help you feel better. Sometimes it might make you cry, but you'll feel better. You can find that song. That's what I believe.
Loving, cheating, hurting, fighting, drinking, pickup trucks, and mother.
You also have to hand in there a few death, murder, mayhem, suicide, you know, songs, you know, that are real.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR Central Standard, we're going to hear from a bunch of local country musicians about their take, their stories, and what this music means to them. But first, Kansas City music critic David Cantwell weighs in on the Ken Burns series itself. He's just written about it for The New Yorker. Hi, David.
Hello, Gina.
So 16 hours is quite a commitment. It's standard Ken Burns, but long by any other standard. So for listeners who may still be deciding whether to go for it or not, what is it that you do and maybe don't get out of this viewing experience?
I think that depends on how much knowledge you bring to it beforehand. One of the things, like, so I have a lot of feedback from people who are different levels of country fan, right? And so the big country hardcore people that I heard, there were basically two takes. Why didn't they include blank and blank and blank? And I missed them not having this person in. And also, why couldn't it have been shorter? And so,
put in more and make it shorter.
Right, exactly. And but I think I would advise anyone who is a big fan or is a moderate fan or even just curious that, yeah, you should definitely watch it. There's so much that you'll learn and that you'll be delighted by. There's plenty that there's plenty of things, plenty of nits to pick, and I'm glad to pick them if you'd
what
like to.
What are a couple?
I think your
top nits to pick.
I think my top nit is that. So one of the things that we need to understand about country music is that it's a synthetic genre, and there is no. I'm glad that you opened by saying that. The Carter family doing Can the Circle Be Unbroken was an example of pure country. Well, there's no such thing as pure country. There's still, at this late date, I think, people who sort of buy into the idea that country is basically just the stuff that came over from the British Isles and isolated hillbillies and yonder hollers listened to it. But in fact, it's been incorporating outside influences from the beginning, including Swiss yodeling and brass marching bands, music, minstrelsy. It's also been borrowing more or less constantly from African-American musics and styles. And so while the documentary does a pretty good job of reminding of that last point. You can't have
often
country music.
Often by where the camera pans on a picture.
Right, right. We're constantly being reminded of that with a slow crawl across a black and white photograph. But I wish that I'd spent more time talking about racial issues and digging into that.
Really directly.
Very directly, because like a word that I don't think ever comes up in the documentary is racism, and that's
it's
what
a lot of hours to not hear that word,
especially when we're talking about the fact. So we note the fact that, for example, Rufus T. Todd Payne was a mentor, a black musician who was a mentor to a young Hank Williams, or that I can't think of the man's last name now, Leslie, I've forgotten his last name, who went on the song-catching expeditions with A.P. Carter to find material, that that both of those men were instrumental to country music and to a particular artist, but they didn't make any money off it. The other people got rich, and they didn't, and that's a big thing to sort of elide.
We just heard a smattering of country music celebrities defining country music in their own terms. What do you think of what they had to say?
I like that they don't focus on the sound. I like very much that they focus on what country's about. I'm less a fan of, that was Kris Kristofferson who said it's soul music because it comes from the soul, as if other musics don't do that in every genre. That the whole idea that that country fans and critics alike are liable to lean on, that country is real, or this is real country, it's authentic, is nuts to me. It's country is art. Art is artifice by definition. It's artificial, and it's about personas.
People make it. Hmm? People make it.
Yes, exactly. But they make it while they're performing, just like in any other genre. So, I do like the idea that country is very focused on grown-up stuff. It used to be known widely as grown-up music, so it dealt with that job you had to get to in the morning, or the job you hated, or the fact that you didn't have a job. It dealt with the fact that you had kids to raise, or your partner left with the kids. It dealt with cheating. It dealt with alcoholism. It dealt with the consequences of crime. It dealt with death. Can the Circle Be Unbroken, which is like the genre's theme song, right? People sing it at the end of all country music gatherings. Here's our big, great group sing-along. It's about carrying a woman's dead body to the graveyard. And that's if you think about so many country songs, He Stopped Loving Her Today, the famous George Jones song, it's about a corpse who's smiling only because the undertaker did a pretty good job. And so I think that focus, all genres deal with those kinds of grown-up issues at some place, but country is really focused on them closely.
The assertion of the series, as far as I can tell, is that the story of country music is the story of America, period. Homesteading, pioneering, the Great Depression, the rise of radio, the rise of television, it's all in there. Is that kind of an important piece of it, to acknowledge that this is partly a lens through which to view American history?
Well, I think you can do that with anything, and that's what Burns does. That's Burns' thing,
yeah,
right?
That is his thing. Baseball. Yeah.
Right. He's going to use it not to talk about the thing itself, but to talk about a particular version of the American story that he's interested in telling. And so I think a lot of the choices that I would say, well, if I were making the documentary, I would have focused on this instead of what he's chosen to do, come back to that. To that focus on America, he's looking for through lines. He's looking for interesting stories that sort of resonate beyond country music itself, and so that's. So I think it's definitely a true statement, but it's true of everything.
I want to talk about what you consider to be just very quickly talk about what you consider to be the big pivotal moments in country music history, and I want to start that conversation by playing Patsy Cline, because I happen to know that Patsy Cline fits in a particular place in your sense of this history and the milestones.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling.
So, David Cantwell, where does this fit into your sense of, like, the big phases of country music?
Well, the short answer is that that's an example of the Nashville sound, the kind of music that Nashville began to make in response to the rock and roll invasion, which had cut down on country's popularity and limited the number of country radio stations. I would note, though, that, so, like I've always said, the country is the place where old sounds go to die.
Or, what do you mean by that?
And maybe a better way to put that is that it's a place where old sounds go to have an active retirement. And so when certain kinds of popular music no longer are very popular. They've kind of got past their peak moment. They tend very often to migrate to country, or country musicians that say, we can still use that. It's a tool that still has good use. And so, like the Patsy Cline thing, in 1962, is it, or whenever that record was a hit, it doesn't sound like the way country records sounded even just 10 years or 5 years before. It achieves that sound by taking that kind of tinkling, jazzy, Tin Pan Alley piano that was the big music during World War II, but has begun to fade in the rock and roll 50s, and say, no, we can still use that. It's already adopting rock and roll. The harmonies by the Jordanaires behind Cline's voice, that's the stuff that they were, that specifically the Jordanaires themselves were playing on Elvis Presley's records.
You know, we've talked about race a little bit. We haven't talked about class. We haven't talked about an urban-rural kind of divide. And I grew up in the city, there's a refrain that I used to hear growing up, people saying, I like every kind of music except country.
Yes.
Looking back on that, I mean, we're all allowed our own personal taste, but to hear that so frequently, it does feel like a way of saying who you are, who you aren't, and maybe that does have to do with urban versus rural, middle class versus blue collar.
I think it has to do with middle class versus blue collar very specifically. I grew up in the city too. But I grew up in a different part of the city. I grew up in a part of the city where the white people listen to country music. That's one of the big things that country has followed, is that transition as people. I've also always said that country music, the name, is kind of a misnomer. It's not primarily been about people who live in the rural parts of the nation. It's a eulogy to the passing away of rural life as people move to small towns, then on to cities, and then on to the suburbs. And
And even like a wistful nostalgia for.
Sometimes it's a wistful nostalgia for. Sometimes it's, as when Dolly Parton sings the good old days when times were bad, when she says, you know, you couldn't pay me enough to take my memories of that time away from me, but you also couldn't pay me enough to go back and live through it again. And that's a pretty... The past is something that is useful often in country music, and it doesn't always... Sometimes it does, but it doesn't always mean I want to go back and live in the old days.
Now, the story in the Ken Burns documentary series kind of ends in the 1990s, and yeah, a lot has happened since then.
Yes, a lot has happened since then. I think ending in 1996 approximately is, you know, it makes sense to me. Some people have criticized it for that. I think it makes sense to sort of treat this century's music as a history that is still unfolding and maybe not appropriate for the story he's telling. We don't have the perspective on it now that we might like to have. I also think 96 is a good kind of pivot point. Because that's when Garth comes up, Garth Brooks, Shania Twain, this whole new superstar level of country music that insists that you have to sell platinum albums and those sorts of things takes over and dominates through the rest of the century. The other thing that happens in that moment is we get radio consolidation and shrinking playlists, which have put us in the place we are today when women don't get to be on the radio anymore, few people of color. Few records. They all sound the same.
David Cantwell, stay with me. I want to start hearing the Kansas City stories that are still unfolding today that fit into this bigger story of country music in America. We will get back to you, though. Let's hear now from Kelly Hunt. She plays the banjo. Hi, Kelly.
Hello.
You live in Kansas City, but you were born and raised in Memphis, and your uncle in Arkansas introduced you to the banjo.
Yes. Yeah, born and raised in Memphis, and really a musically eclectic household, but in the city that's very much steeped in American roots music, early rock and roll and blues and Johnny Cash recording and Sun Studios and Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis and all these, just this wonderful hotbed of American music, and was introduced to bluegrass and kind of mountain music through an uncle who plays bluegrass, lives in Mountain View, Arkansas, which is kind of one of the folk centers of the country. And kind of got enamored with the banjo and got my first banjo and started teaching myself and really getting deep into Appalachian music. So
I want to hear the story of your calfskin tenor banjo, how you got it, what it taught you about the music and its origins.
Yeah, so I started out on five string and had played that for a few years and moved to East Tennessee and was still learning it there. Then moved to Kansas City a little over 4 years ago and encountered my first tenor banjo.
Encountered how?
A local guy named Lance Steele. He's a musician and he also has a private collection of old instruments. He likes old things. And he came to one of my shows one time with a banjo case in hand and said, "Are you looking for another banjo?" And I said, "No, I'm really not, but I'll take a look." And I opened it up and it was this little four-string tenor banjo with a note in the case saying it was played by a man named Ira Tam in his Dog and Pony Show from 1920 to 1935. Had the original calfskin head. I could see the oil stains where Ira's finger oils, you know, imprinted the banjo, and
so
I strummed
magical.
It was this time stop for a moment, and I strummed this thing, and it was unlike any banjo I'd ever heard. You have a notion in your mind of what a banjo sounds like. You know, it's kind of brash and loud and harsh. It can just carry. It's got a spirit and a spunk, and this wasn't like that. It was muted and soft and warm, and I love both, but this was a different dimension of the instrument that I really got interested in. And as a, you see the drum head, you know, and it, you see it as a drum in a different way with that calfskin head. And so, it was then that I started to really get interested in the origins of the banjo and it being an African instrument and the percussive qualities of the instrument. And
what do you know about the history of the banjo that you think that even like super diehard country music fans may not know?
Well, yeah, that the slaves brought the banjo to America, really. It was their contribution to our American music, which is really just kind of crazy and ironic, you know, that so much of our American music came from a people that we enslaved and that they contributed to the soul of what we consider American folk music really came from the people that we brought here forcibly and didn't recognize as citizens. And so that fusing with, you know, the European influence of the violin coming over and those old Scotch-Irish ballads and the yodeling from the Swiss Alps and all these things sort of marrying together, all these beautiful global music traditions marrying to create what we think of as American folk music. So, yeah, I really got into the history and the storytelling and started writing in a very different way once I got that tenor.
How would you define country music, maybe as compared to the big national celebrities whose definitions mm-hmm. we heard earlier in the show?
It's kind of a mutt of a genre. You know, you have sort of more some genres that are more purebred. They're just very distilled down to a very focused kind of, even though there's variety within it, it's very definable in a different way. And yeah, American country music, I mean, it's the mutt. It takes a little bit of this and a little bit of that, a little bit of blues, a little bit of you know, the Scotch-Irish ballads, a little bit, and it innovates with these different forms and creates something new out of something that's very, very old. And it speaks to the heart of the human experience. It's folk music. It's for the folks. It's for the common man. It's for the everyman.
You know, we asked everyone coming in today about the musicians who influenced them and the songs that they might like to talk about. And one of the people you mentioned is Hank Williams. So let's listen to a little Hank Williams as we talk about what country music is with Kelly Hunt.
Find us a brand new recipe.
Why Hank Williams? I mean, you could say why not Hank Williams, but why Hank Williams?
Oh, he's definitely my man. And I think there's just something so raw and honest and he's disarming. And he speaks, you know, you look at his songs sort of on just a pure lyrical level and how he united lyrics with music, but he's just, it's poetry in the most simplistic, witty, approachable form, and he's dealing with real subject matter, but in such a lighthearted and disarming way. There's more depth to him than meets the eye And then you look at also like him writing a song like I Saw the Light, you know, and taking the gospel tradition, which, I mean, so much of that's rooted in the African spirituals, you know, and that sort of tradition they brought over here, and reinterpreting that into his own brand of music. And it's just such a, I don't know, on some soul level, he's so satisfying to me in a way maybe I don't even understand. There's just a personality there and a force of, he's a force of nature.
If your wildest dreams were to come true, what would be your contribution to country music as a woman making that music in Kansas City in the 21st century?
Gosh, to carry on the tradition, but to, you know, honoring all these, all of these incredible music makers who shaped this genre before me, but then also, you know, innovating in my own way. One of my favorite parts of the documentary was, you know, I love the Carter family. Some of the first, one of the first songs I learned on banjo was Wildwood Flower. And I just, I loved the, loved that. And one of the parts of the documentary, they talk about Ma Carter, Mabel Carter's style of playing guitar and how she had this very innovative style. She used her thumb to really pick out a melody, but she was also holding down the rhythm and the chords. And it was just this very simple but full and impressive sound. And someone asked her about it, and she was like, well, I just did what I wanted to hear, and I didn't think too much about it.
Kelly Hunt.
Do that.
Yeah, do that. Thank you so much. I'm Gina Kaufman. We will hear more country music stories when Central Standard returns. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about Kansas City's country music stories with Kansas City's country music musicians in a conversation inspired by the new Ken Burns series on PBS. We heard just now from banjo player Kelly Hunt. Now I want to hear from Scott Hobart, a.k.a. Rex of Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys, a band that performs in Kansas City dive bars while clad in Western shirts and cowboy boots. And really delighting in the whole country persona, the band has a longstanding following, but it would be easy to assume that Rex, who came up out of the art rock scene, is this city guy putting on some kind of act. That's not even remotely the case. We're going to hear his story now. Scott, a.k.a. Rex, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. Rex was your dad.
That's right. Yeah. Rex Hobart was my dad. Yep.
And you grew up on country music.
I did. Yeah. I grew up in a, between a shoe shop and a hair salon, listening to a lot of country radio.
Whereabouts?
St. James, Missouri and Rolla, Missouri, around there.
As I mentioned, you took a detour early in your music career as really like a figure in Kansas City's alternative rock scene. And I mean alternative not in the sense of like grunge or something. I mean like sort of experimental sound.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. I mean essentially a rock and roll band, but yeah, you know, you're trying to wrench what you can out of this instrument that is unique, hopefully. And so yeah.
So then what inspired you to get back to the country sounds you grew up on?
I've told this story a few times, probably on this radio station, but it's, I guess, worth repeating. I was on the road with the rock band. We were on the East Coast, and I was kind of just looking for something to contrast the loud guitars that were happening constantly. And so I was also by then interested in trying to write, I was just peeling back, you know, peeling the onion and getting down to what is a song, I guess. And so I wanted to write some really straightforward songs, and I picked up a George Jones cassette at a truck stop and started listening and pretty much immediately started writing country songs.
You know, I want to listen to some of your favorites. When we asked you what music you might want to talk about as you sort of dig into what country music means to you, you mentioned that from early on you were just transfixed by Merle Haggard.
Yeah, I think, you know, at first, George Jones, you know, that was a huge voice in our house growing up. My mom was in his fan club, and, you know, it was just always a big thing when George was on TV. And so, but when I started really getting into it myself, I pretty quick jumped to Merle Haggard and Bakersfield, you know, but yes, very specifically
Merle.
What
does Bakersfield mean to country music fans?
Well, I mean, it's the sound of Buck Owens, you know, and Merle Haggard. It's very, you know, Telecaster. I mean, it's a really clean guitar, tight sound. I mean, they were essentially the twangy rock band, but, you know, very tight. And I don't know if that answers it, but.
Well, let's listen. This is Merle Haggard with Okie from Muskogee.
Mm-hmm.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take no trips on LSD. We don't burn no drive cars down on Main Street. We like living right, being free. And we don't make no party out of loving. We like holding hands and pitching woo. We don't let our hair grow long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee.
You talked about the musical sound, mm-hmm. the clean guitar, and the. But there's also a kind of content in the storytelling that intrigues me.
Yeah, you know, Merle was, you know, kind of the classic blue collar poet, I feel like, you know, and so. I mean, that song, it sort of deals with nostalgia, but I do think a lot of his other stuff is more timeless, you know, and has to do with, you know, the heart and the, you know, the working man, you know, working man blues. That's one of his classics.
I also want to play in just a moment Dolly Parton's Coat of Many Colors, because you mentioned that that's a song that makes you cry, and I like to make people cry, I guess. But I am curious, going into it, what is it about it that evokes that kind of emotional response from you, do you think? And people can listen for that.
Yeah, I think it's just the innocence, you know, it's the voice of a child, really, is this, you know, she's just remembering this moment of her mom having made this coat out of all these rags they had, and I don't know. I just choke up because it's just, you know, a poor kid trying to make do, you know, and it's heavy.
It is heavy. Let's listen to Dolly Parton's Coat of Many Colors right now.
Back through the years, I go wandering once again. Back to the seasons of my youth, I recall of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was away down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly.
Scott Hobart, a.k.a. Rex, talk to me about this song and how it relates to what you connect to in country music.
Well, you know, this song is interesting as far as, you know, to me, country music, you know, I kind of joke that it's about drinking and cheating, and that's sort of the only subject matter I deal with. in my songs for some
reason. That's your repertoire.
Yeah, my corner. But this song, I mean, musically, it's so simple. And it's so innocent. I mean, in a way, I guess this is a kind of a high contrast type of song that I do very much love, because while a lot of what I write is definitely not about innocence, this one is. And I think that's why it really stands out to me as something special. And I remember it too. I mean, I remember seeing her on, you know, on the Porter Wagoner show, and like growing up with, you know, her on the TV too, you know. And so I feel like she's a friend, kind of, you know, an old friend.
I'd like to bring in another voice now, Maria Elena Cuevas, who performs with a band called Maria the Mexican. She grew up playing mariachi with her grandmother. And Maria, you also love Dolly Parton. I should say that everyone we talk to for this show loves Dolly Parton.
Absolutely. She was someone who really drew me into country music. In particular, the song Jolene, the first time I heard that, I fell in love with her. I fell in love with that song. And
Why do you think? That's a song asking another woman to sort of another woman who her man is.
Yeah.
Like not to do it.
Yeah. So I think the lyrics are very capturing. I think many women can relate to that. It's interesting how she addresses the woman instead of the man. And I think that she delivers her music with such great emotion. It's just something that you can immediately connect to and that you can really feel in your heart.
You grew up playing music in a mariachi band from a young age, as I mentioned. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So my grandmother, Teresa Cuevas, started one of the first all-female mariachi bands in the country. And after kind of revisiting the documentary last night and hearing the stories of Sarah and Maybelle Carter, I really kind of was drawing my own parallels to my grandmother, who raised several children, was later divorced, and really found her voice after all of that time when she began playing mariachi music in the church. And she met her bandmates and went on to form Mariachi Estrella. They were involved in the Hyatt Skywalk collapse, unfortunately. So, tragedy.
Were performing there.
They were. So, you know, tragedy was part of her life, but she was really able to pick herself back up very quickly and make preservation of mariachi music her goal. She later went on to teach her grandchildren the music, including my sister and I. And at the age of 11, my parents pretty much just told me that I would play the vihuela, which has been referred to as the Mexican mandolin. It's the smaller five-stringed instrument with the raised back that you would traditionally see in a mariachi band. And we went out performing, and my sister and I performed with her for about 10 years.
I understand that you grew up thinking that Linda Ronstadt was a mariachi musician.
I did, yeah. I thought that Más Canciones and Canciones de Mis Padres, those albums of hers, I thought that she was just a mariachi star. It was much later in life that I started listening to her other music, her other genres, and other female musicians like Emmylou Harris and you know what they did together. I was totally surprised, had no idea.
Let's listen to a little Linda Ronstadt. This is a song called Carmelita. Maria Elena Cuevas, when you hear this, what are your thoughts? What do you notice?
Well, her voice, first and foremost, is incredible. I think Linda Ronstadt has one of the best voices I've ever heard. I love the instrumentation. the stringed instruments, just her style in general. Again, I think it really captures the listener. I think that the lyrics are very approachable. You can really connect to them and feel what she's trying to convey through music.
I noticed on your website that you're wearing a cowboy hat on the page that has your bio, and you look what some people might think of as very country, but in the band bio, you list like a gazillion different musical genres that are part of your sound, and the word country does not appear, and I'm curious about whether there's something going on there, like maybe even an identity thing. You identify so strongly as Mexican that you actually call your band Maria the Mexican, and we're talking today because of a Ken Burns series that posits that country music is essentially the story of U.S. history very specifically, and I'm interested in that.
Sure. So it's taken us a long time to find the words, a few words, to describe our sound. We're certainly influenced by mariachi music, which in many ways has parallels to country music, with the stringed instruments, with the minor keys, with the songs of heartache and love. And the band is really a tribute to my experience in the mariachi band. My current band is. Now, it's a hybrid or a mezcla. So we've heard today, you know, country music's kind of a mutt. Well, so am I. And so is my music. In addition to the mariachi sound, if you come to a show, you'll hear many songs delivered in English with more of a bluesy soul, funk vibe. And I think that our music is just a representation of our experience of being so many things and not feeling like we have to stick ourselves in a box.
Maria Elena Cuevas, thank you so much for sharing your perspective.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Hobart of Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Up next, Madison Ward and Mama Bear on KCUR Central Standard. We're talking about country music. Stay tuned. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking now to the mother-son duo, Madison Ward and the Mama Bear. They're from here, I should say, but they've become a truly national act, so I'm really honored that they wanted to be part of this conversation about country music today. Madison Ward, hello.
Hey, Gina, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
A little too much coffee this morning, I think.
Better than not enough.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll find out.
The verdict is out. Yeah.
Ruth Ward, a.k.a. Mama Bear, hello to you, too.
Hello.
So talk to me, you guys, about how you would describe your music, first of all, and then your influences and where you think of country as fitting into that.
I would describe our music as sort of our spin on folk music, really. It's, it's very singer-songwritery storytelling, a lot of times coming from fictional places. We try not to put any sort of any limit on what we want to, you know, talk about or how vague or how personal or how real or anything. I think it's just we try to just be as creative as possible, and we keep it very melody driven. I think, you know, that's sort of first and foremost for us.
Ruth, jump in here.
Oh, jump! Oh, just jump in.
Okay.
Quickly.
Okay.
Jump.
I think for myself, I see it as he was talking, how it would relate to country music or whatever. I think the music that we do, it can fit anywhere: country, blues, jazz, or whatever. I think when Madison and I first played at the Midland, we opened for B.B. King, and I thought, how could our music open for B.B. King? But it worked, and I think it's because it's a genreless music. And so we've played in Nashville, the Ryman, and played with Old Crow Medicine Show, and it all just blended. It's because it's a genreless music.
It seems like your connection to the country genre, from what I understand, it has to do with the importance of like rugged individualism as opposed to fitting in. Can you talk to me about that?
Rugged individualism. Yeah, I like that. That's interesting. No, as opposed to fitting in, that's where a lot of the, I think, classic country music, I think that's where a lot of it starts, and it's really just you know, a lot of it's pretty simple, and it's pretty you know, off the beaten path sort of music. And I think that's what we've always really, you know, strived to sort of maintain, is just sort of an organic, roots based, like you said, rugged. It's just, it's, you know, it's not perfect. Nothing's perfected. There's a lot of imperfections. It's not clean. And I think that's where that rugged individualism comes from. And I think that early country music, that singer-songwritery stuff, it's very, it's rugged by nature. And we're drawn to that with other musicians who we're influenced by. I think there's a lot of ruggedness because life is rugged. And I hate to say that because it just it feels, you know, almost cliche to say it, but life is rugged. And so you keep the music rugged, you know? And I don't know. I think we're drawn to that.
I like the word raw.
Yeah.
It's very raw. And I have this thing that says, you be you and I'll be me.
You know,
and that's the purity of country music. Are there people being themselves?
Are there country musicians who you really identify strongly with? Or just like a lot?
I like, but for different reasons. But like one of my favorite country musician that I loved was Waylon Jennings, and I loved his ballads, and I was hoping to hear him before he passed away, but that didn't happen. But I really, and like the Highwaymen with Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, and Waylon, I mean, it was just great music, and it was simple. It wasn't all, you know, fleshed out, every little, you know, like when you go into the studio, everything is perfect.
There's no fluff.
Yeah, no fluff. It was just the way it was. So, yeah.
We heard earlier in the show, one of the musicians interviewed by Ken Burns says that country is the white man's soul music.
That was Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah. Curious what you guys think of that.
The white man soul music. Well, there's a lot of white man soul music, you know. There's, you know, I mean, that's what they said about Hall and Oates. I mean, soul music is soul music, you know. I mean,
if you're
feeling it, you know. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's your environment around you. But yeah, you have. I mean, I guess that's the nature versus nurture question that people can discuss, but I don't know. If you got a soul, and go put it into your music, and if you're putting it into your music, then you're you know, it doesn't, I don't think it, Matt, I don't think the soul music discriminates on whatever you are, but I don't know, like I love it all.
I feel sorry for Kris Kristofferson.
No,
they're gonna hit him up like, why did you say that?
No they're not that's a good quote. It's not bad.
Ruth, you've brought a guy named Charlie Pride to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about him. We're going to hear a little bit of his music in a second.
Well, that's when it gets back to, you have to be who you are. And like I was telling someone, that when people see me, they think, well, you must be a gospel singer, blues singer, or a soul singer. And when they find out that I am none of those, they're surprised. And the reason is because I'm all about being who I am. And I really appreciate Charlie Pride being who he is. And
a black
country musician. Wasn't an R&B singer or anything. And he was just who he was. In a world of white people who said, hey, you can come in. They were allowing certain people in, and they allowed Charlie Pride. And he did well, but he was true to who he was. Mm-hmm. He didn't try to become something that he was not. I love that.
Let's listen a little bit.
So I feel so blue, sometimes I wanna die. And so I've got a broken heart, so what? They say that time will heal all wounds in mice and men. And I know that someday I'll forget and love again. But just between you and me.
What do you think about the way that whiteness is maybe part of the lens of how country music is understood, especially when you hear a voice like Charlie Pride's?
I think it was history. It was the day. It was the time. And you might, there's things in history that we don't particularly care for, but it doesn't make it go away. And I think that what is going on today is what's important. There are a lot of black musicians that are a part of country music today that probably wouldn't have been able to be that back in the 50s and the 60s. But it's okay. It's history. It's gone. And we need to just accept it and go on down the road. And that's how I feel.
And always acknowledge that history, too, and keep that with us.
Yeah.
By the way, Gina, how do you feel this is going?
Oh, great.
Good. Me too.
The hybrid, I'm curious about whether you think that the hybrid form that you guys talk about, that Maria the Mexican talked about, is that part of what people should consider when they think about the future of country music?
The hybrid of just
musical genres, the patchwork, the what she called the mutt, or some, you know.
Totally. I mean, I think we try to play music, and we've been classified as country musicians before, and blues musician. I was like, I don't play the blues, and I don't play country. I don't know any of these. I mean, I'm the least knowledgeable to have a stance on any of these genres, but I think. I love music that comes from just whatever melody you got in your head and just trying to build upon that as much as possible. And I think if you do that, you're going to start pulling from genres subconsciously, unknowingly. And that's I love that. I love the hybrid because people can get so much out of it. And it can also open people up to other genres that maybe they didn't think that they ever could listen to, because they're like, well, I may not like country, but I do like that one guy who sounds a little like this, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
David Cantwell, music critic, pop music and country writer for Rolling Stone. Jump back in here.
Yeah, I've wanted to jump in a million times.
Yeah, you've been listening to a lot of stories and
very
a lot of perspectives.
Like Charlie Pride, so he grew up in the Jim Crow era of the in Mississippi, right? And everyone expected that he would, he must want to sing the blues. And instead, he grew up in a household where his father was a big Grand Ole Opry fan. Lots and lots of African Americans, particularly in the South, were Grand Ole Opry fans because it was one of the programs you could get no matter where you lived. And so they were familiar with those songs and picked and chose, and Pride in particular fell in love with that music, and never says, I don't know how much I believe him entirely, but he always said that, it never occurred to me that I shouldn't be a country singer just because I was black until people started pointing it out to me.
Mm-hmm.
His strategy for that always was to sort of acknowledge it quickly when he walked on stage. I know it's strange that I have this permanent tan, he would say, and the audience would feel, okay, we've mentioned the elephant in the room, we can go on.
Mm-hmm. The black elephant.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So there's a story I liked that I really moved by with Charlie Pride. So he's had a few hits. It's in the late 60s. He's becoming a superstar, right? And Webb Pierce, who is a honky-tonk legend and had actually already kind of seen his day pass, comes up to Charlie and says, Charlie, we're so glad you're doing so well. We're so glad to invite you into our music. We're just glad to have you to here playing our music. And Charlie said,
wow.
Charlie said, it's my music.
Oh.
And Webb Pierce said, what? And Charlie said, it's my music too.
Yeah.
And that's where I hope we're headed.
Yeah.
With
any other
country music today.
Any other thoughts you want to leave us with as far as where we're headed?
Well, to follow up on that thought, there's a lot of African-American artists who are, Kane Brown, African-American singer, had a number one country album. Jimmy Allen had a number one country hit, and so there's some progress being made, but it's too late and too little so far, but I hope that we're moving in the right direction, at least on that front.
Our time is up. David Cantwell, thanks so much.
Sure, thank you.
And Madison Ward and the Mama Bear, Ruth Ward, thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. You guys are great.
This conversation featuring tons of local musicians will be available at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. And you'll find lots of good weekend listening while you're there. It's the weekend, but if you want to chat us up before we're back on Monday, you can do that on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Noah Taborda, Ann Kniggendorf, and Aviva Okeson-Haberman. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us. We used sound this week from Andrea Tudhope, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.